We are holding on Kofir Dalid on the base, 6 lines from the bottom. We left off yesterday that the last thing we talked about is that a son inherits from his mother, but not insofar as that from him there will be mishmush to his brothers. That the Yerusha would then pass from him to his half brothers who are not from the same mother, that wouldn't be the case. That was how Tosis explained it. We said that Rashbam explained that that everybody agreed to that explanation. We said similarly to the way that with a husband and wife you don't have, but that Rashbam understood it, that it was the Roy and Muchsik thing, that a husband doesn't Yarshin what his wife would have Yarshin had the person she's going to Yarshin from passed away before that. And according to Tosfos, rather it's talking about that the husband doesn't Yarshin from her in such a way that then it's going to go to his sons from other wives. So that was that.
Practically that implies what?
So that's that. It means, in other words, that, for example, like we said yesterday, Leah passes away. Her son, Reuven, is supposed to be yarshin her. If Reuven is dead, then fine, his own children, as we're going to see in the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it, yarshin instead. But if Reuven is already dead, when Leah dies, it doesn't go through Reuven to his half-brother Yosef. Instead, it would go back to her family, to her father if he's still alive, to her brothers, to her nieces and nephews, as the case may be, et cetera, as we'll see in the next Mishnah. So now another point about this business of a parent yarshining from a child. So we said yesterday that the Mishnah had told us a father yarshins from his son, but we said that a mother does not yarshin from her son. So Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Yehuda ben Rav Shimon. So Rav Yochanan says in the name of Rav Yehuda, the son of Rav Shimon. And by the way, the Rashbam points out a little nuance of it. Usually, when somebody says in the name of somebody else, usually it would be like, Omer Rav Yechanan, Omer Rav Yehuda Rav Shimon. Why were you Mishum? The Rashbam says, because now sometimes Mishum means that actually he said it like a third hand or something. He heard that this is what the other person said, but he himself didn't hear it because that person passed away before he was born or whatever. Here the Rashbam says that's not what it means. It just means Rav Yehuda Rav Shimon is not his regular Rebbe. So he's not... Usually, Rabbi Yechanan is not saying things in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon. Therefore, when he does, in this case, say something in his name, it's Mishum. We're going to see later on in the discussion, we're going to see Rabbi Yechanan actually talks to Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon. So obviously, they were contemporaries, they did live at the same time, but Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon was not, in fact, his regular Rebbe. His regular Rebbe is Rabbi Yanai, so we said the other day, for example, Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Omer Rabbi Yanai, but not him. Okay, so he says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon, Devar Torah, Mina Torah, meaning from the pasuk, we can learn as follows: Ha'av Yerush as b'noi, v'isha Yerush as b'no. That a father can yarshin from his son or his daughter, but also a mother can yarshin from her son or daughter. We said mishpachas of near the beginning of the parak. We said that the mishpacha of the father is called mishpacha, not the mishpacha of the mother. This opinion would hold. That's true, but only insofar as the father goes ahead of the mother. But he would still say, if the father is dead by the time the child dies, then the mother yarshin.
So mishpacha can mean the mother.
Not mishpacha can mean the mother, but it would mean like, say, we're going to see based on a different. Shenema matos, because the pasuk says, the pasuk talks about a woman who yarshins from matos, and we said the other day, matos implies that she yarshins from two different matos. But we can understand the word matos meaning makish, mateha'em, mateha'at. We're making a comparison between the mate, the shevet of the father, of the mother, and the shevet of the father. Namely, ma mateha'av, av yarishes, just like when it comes to the father yarishens from his son, as we learned back near the beginning of the parak, either because we learned from she'era, and we said she'era meant his father, or because we said v'havartem, that the daughter goes ahead of somebody we would have thought should otherwise go ahead, namely the father. Whatever it is, so just like the father yarshins from his children, so it is also with the shevet that the mother comes from, she also is in a position to yarshin from her children.
Everybody agrees with that?
No, that's what we're saying. Esvei Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Yehuda ben Shimon, so Rabbi Yochanan asks Rabbi Yehuda ben Shimon, what about our Mishnah says? Ha'isha esbana, v'ha'isha esbaila, we said a mother to her son, a woman to her son, a wife to her husband, v'achei ha'em, and brothers from the mother's side only, manchilin v'lanochlin, all of those bequeath, but they don't inherit. Again, meaning, in other words, the Mishnah is telling us, for example, that a mother bequeaths her property to her son yarshins her, but not the other way around. She doesn't yarshin from her son. And similarly with the husband and wife, and similarly with the maternal, and similarly with the brothers on the mother on the mother's side. Esvenah means her son. So the Mishnah clearly says that a mother does not inherit from her son. And here you're telling me that a mother does inherit from her son on the basis of the limud from Matzos.
Manchilin means
they bequeath. In other words, they are the original owner of the property, and now after they pass away, it goes to this particular heir.
Noichalin means to inherit.
Would be from the recipient's point of view. So what is it? So the Mishnah clearly says that a mother doesn't yarshin from her son. What are you telling me that she does? By the way, Tosfos brings up a point like this. We've been discussing the last couple of days the whole problem of hasavas nachla, the whole problem that the Torah wants to avoid, that nachla is going to go from one shevet to another. If you're telling me, Rabbi Yehuda Reb Shimon, if you're telling me that a mother can yarshin from her son, why are we saying that only a woman who yarshins property has to marry within her shevet, and a man who yarshins property should also have to marry only within his own shevet? Because otherwise, he might die ahead of his son might die, and then his wife, who's from another shevet, is going to yarshin, and eventually it'll go to her, and eventually it'll go to her family. So Tosfos actually answers, you have to say that all Gemara, that Rabbi Yehuda Reb Shimon Din, would only be talking about a case of where she's a Giyoris and her son is a Ger. Now, her son being a Ger, if there were no heir for him, then as we've learned many times, his property would be Hefker. It would be free for the taking. That is specifically where Rabbi Yehuda Reb Shimon is learning from the Pasuk that no, his mother is able to Yarshim. In a normal case where they're all born Jews, then no, the mother Taka wouldn't yarshin, because then Taka you have that problem. Why is the father allowed to marry her in the first place? But because she herself is a Giyoris and her son is a Ger, therefore we're saying that that's the case where Rabbi Yehuda Reb Shimon is learning from the Pasuk that she will yarshin him to avoid his property becoming Hefker. The Rosh deals with this also. The Rosh says you don't need that answer. You could just say more straightforwardly that it's much more common that you'll have a situation where a daughter inherits Nachla from her parents or whatever, and then she gets married and then dies, and then her son, who's from another shevet, yarshins her, Hasavas Abayin, as we talked about the other day. That's much more common than the scenario that you want to talk about over here, where conceivably the husband might die, the son might die, and only then she dies. It's an uncommon enough case.
Oh, yeah.
The Rosh says that the Pasuk wasn't worried about it. Besides that, he says another thing also. With a woman, as we talked about the other day, you have two ways in which Hasava can happen. You have two ways in which the Nachla ends. So, you want to move the table? Yeah, you want to move the table a little bit out of bounds. All right. Fine. You want to grab the table and move over a little bit? Yeah. So by a woman, you have two ways in which Hasavas Nachla can happen. It can go to her husband, because her husband yashins her, or it can go to her son, because her son yashins her.
Right.
In the case of a man, the case that Tosfos is asking about, you only have one possible scenario where the Nachla would go away from his shevet. Namely, again, if he dies, and his son dies, and then his wife yashins the property through their son. So it's only one way that there could be a Hasavas Nachla, only through his wife yarshining via their son, not another way, and therefore that's another reason that Rosh says the Torah may not have been concerned about it. Okay, getting back to
it.
It's with the woman, it's both, her husband and her son. With the husband, it's only that his wife could end up getting it, according to Rabbi Yehuda Reb Shimon, via their son, if their son died first. Okay. So anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan asks Rabbi Yehuda Reb Shimon, the Mishnah says that a mother does not inherit from her son. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan answers him, not Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yehuda Reb Shimon answers him, Mishnah Seinu, any idea, Mishnah, you know what, I don't know who taught our Mishnah. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda Reb Shimon says, I don't accept that our Mishnah represents the actual halacha. The Rashbam says the reason is because we're going to point out in a few lines that on the face of it, the Mishnah seems to be contradicting itself as far as the limud, what we use the limud for and what we don't use it for. This is this hekesh of the word matzos. So that's he says, therefore, so I don't consider our Mishnah to be reliable. Evidently, Rabbi Yehuda Reb Shimon must have still been a Tana in order for him to be able to argue with the Mishnah. Maybe not, though. I mean, Rabbeinu Gershom has a different explanation. He says that just what Rabbi Yehuda Reb Shimon says, I don't know of any Tana who holds like the opinion of our Mishnah. Therefore, that alone must show that that's not reliable.
So he would be an amora?
He would be an amora, but he's pointing out there doesn't seem to be any known opinion of a tana. That's in Psukim, this is in Mishnayos. And in Mishnayos, they were there. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, why not? Why doesn't he say, very simple, our Mishnah could be going according to Reb Chai ben Akasev. We talked the other day about how Reb Chai ben Akasev says that when it comes to the nachla of the mother, sons and daughters inherit equally from her, unlike with the nachla of the father, where the son comes first. And we said, why? Because he, Deloy Dorish Matos. He said there, because he doesn't darshan the drosha, he doesn't darshan the hekesh of the word matos, to say that the father's and the mother's nachla are similar. Well then, if you're not making that hekesh, then the Mishnah would make sense that the father can yarshin from his son or from his daughter, but the mother can't. But if you so fine, Rabbi Yehuda ben Shimon would be going according to the opinion that do darshin that drasha, and the Mishnah would be going according to not. But what do you mean, any day Mishnah? You have Rabbi Chai ben Akasev's opinion.
Who says that?
That's what Gemara is asking. Why can't he say that the Mishnah goes according to the Chai ben Akasev, and then not say, I don't know that there's any Tana that holds that.
He's not making the Hekesh, and therefore...
Reb Chai ben Akasev doesn't hold of that Hekesh. You don't hold of that Hekesh, fine. Then you're able to say a son yarshins from his... A father, yarshins from his son, but a mother doesn't yarshin from her son. The answer is, loy mitoykma masnissin to Reb Chai ben Akasev. Fine, but you can't understand the Mishnah to be going like the Chai ben Akasev. Because our Mishnah also continues, by saying that children of a sister don't yarshin, but don't bequeath. Betana, and we learned in a braisa on it, which we said yesterday, that Mishnah means bnei ochos, v'lo bnos ochos, only the sons of the sister inherit, but the daughters of the sister do not.
Maybe it's just for the sister.
No, wait. No, but the Mishnah is putting them together. The Mishnah is putting them in one court. The mother and the... Yeah. And Amrinan, and we said on that in yesterday's Gemara, Lamai Hilsa, what do you mean only the sons inherit, the daughters don't? We know that in any case where a son is able to inherit, then if there's no sons, then the daughters inherit instead. Amrinan, and we said over there, Rav Sheshes said over there, all it meant is Lakadim, all it meant is that the Braise is clarifying that the Mishnah means that when it comes to children of a sister, the sons come ahead of the daughter. In other words, the same idea. In other words, you have a man dies. So let's say, for example, Reuven dies. He has a sister. He has a sister Dina, who has sons and daughters. Those sons will be the first ones to inherit. If there's no sons, then the daughters will. But that's what the Mishnah is implying by saying Bnei Och. Now, if you're going to say that our Mishnah, in the case of the mother yarshining from her child, holds like a Chayiv and Akasev, he says that both boys and girls are identical when it comes to the Chachm of the mother. And in this case, they're inheriting through their mother Dina from her brother Reuven. According to the Chayiv and Akasev, they should be exactly equal. And yet the Mishnah is telling us, by implication of using the word Bnei Ochos, that not.
But
obviously,
in other words.
What? That it means not that Bonet can't inherit, but that the sons go ahead of them. If Dina has sons, then it goes to them. Only if she doesn't have sons, then it goes to her daughters. So we see that part of the Mishnah doesn't go like the Chayiv and Akasev. Therefore, the part about the mother not yarshining from her son can't be like the Chayiv and Akasev either. Okay. Fine. So the question now is like this. The Tana Didan Mimonisha. Fine. Okay. We have to ask then, so what does the Tana of our Mishnah hold? The Tana of our Mishnah seems to be inconsistent. You're telling me then that he's saying again that there's a difference between a father yarshining from his children and a mother yarshining from her children, which we just said that Rabbi Yehuda ben Shimon argued that they should be the same on the basis of the hekesh of the word matos. But we know the Tana of our Mishnah does hold of that hekesh because he taka holds against Reb Chai ben Akasev in the case of Bnei Ochos.
Does hold of it.
So that's the question. The Tana did on Mimonosha. Either way, he seems to be inconsistent. If the Tana of our Mishnah holds of the hekesh of the word matos, then it should mean the father and the mother are identical for all purposes, meaning, in other words, just as the father can yarshin from his children, which we learned from one of the Limudim at the beginning of the parak, so should a mother be able to yarshin from her children. Eloy Dorish Matis, Ben Dakota Labas, Nichsa Eminole. And if he doesn't darshan the Dirosha of the Hekesh from the word Matis, then how does he know that when it comes to the Chosim of the mother, that she of her own, or that she Yarshan from her brother in this case, that it goes to the son first, which we're saying that we learn from the word B'nai Ochas. After all, there's no such thing as a Hekesh Lamasa. There's no such thing as you make a Hekesh and you only learn some din. If we made a Hekesh, it's an all or nothing deal. So what does the Tana of our Mishnah hold? Does he hold of that Hekesh or not? The answer is La'olam Dorish Matis. Now, after all, the Tana of our Mishnah does use the Drosha, does use the Drosha from the word Matis, that the father and the mother are similar, and that's where he says, therefore, that just as when it comes to the father, the son Yarshan is ahead of the daughter, meaning the son Yarshan's only if the daughter Yarshan's only if there's no son, so it is also within the chasm of the mother. Like we said the other day in the discussion about Reb Chaya ben Akasha. Aye, then why is he saying that a mother doesn't inherit from her children if a father inherits from his children? Because of a shiny hawk, because it's different over here, to Amak Pro, because you have a different, you have a line in the pasuk that says, called Bas Yereshes Nachla. It says, any daughter who Yarshan's a Nachla, who Yarshan's property, implying Yereshes Ve'ena Moyreshes. Now the word Yereshes means she inherits, not Moyreshes, she bequeaths. So therefore, in other words, So the pasuk is telling us, therefore, now the pasuk didn't have to use the word yereshes at all. It could have said b'chol bas nachla, any daughter who has a nachla. By saying the word yereshes, it's possible for her to yarshin mi matos from two different matos, but it's not possible for her to bequeath to two different matos yereshes ve'ena mereshes. She yarshins from her parents. She can yarshin from either her mother or her father. Thus, it can be from two different matters. But she's not moireshes. She's not moireshes to matters because it doesn't happen through her that her parents, that her father or her mother are going to yarshin from her.
So
that's what Artana is saying. So he does hold of the hekesh of the word matzah,
right.
But because you also have in that pasuk it says b'chobas yereshes nachla, she's only, in other words, that the matzah, in other words, is where she receives the nachla from, not where her nachla could conceivably go to.
Right.
So therefore, she can yarshin from her parents, but her parents cannot yarshin from her. That's what the Tana of our Mishnah is saying.
Not
her parents, rather her mother can't yarshin from her father. Her father can yarshin from her just like any father can yarshin from his children. But her mother not. We don't use, because the pasuk itself is telling us yereshes, from which we learn, and not moireshes, that means that she can receive from either one of her parents, but not give to both of her parents, only to one of them, namely her father.
How the other opinion, whether they do that pasuk.
Rabbi Chaya ben Akasev would say Rabbi Chaya ben Akasev didn't hold of the Gzeira Shava, of the Hekesh of Matzos at all. And Rabbi Shimon would say that he says, okay, the pasuk had to use the word Yereshes. That's the Lashon HaPasuk. It's a normal thing for the pasuk to say that. There is, by the way, a different. The Rashbam brings from Rabbi Hananel another explanation that how do we learn this is because the pasuk says mi Matzos. The mem is a mute. It means that she can yarshin partially from two matzahs. But she can't, but
from two matzahs,
plural, but only me matzahs, that it means, in other words, that she can that she yarshins from her parents, but she doesn't yarshin from her daughter or her son. So either we learn it from the word yoreshes, which implies yoreshes and not moreshes, or we learn it from the miut of the mem of mimatas. There is a different explanation, though. Sameach wants to say that, at least according to the Rashbam, the correct girsa should be that a bas is yoreshes, but an aim is not yoreshes. The limud is yet another way. Since the pasuk is called bas yoreshes nachla, a daughter who yarshin, the implication is she can only yarshin as a daughter. She cannot yarshin as a mother. So that's that then. So the maskana is, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda ber Shimon. The halacha is, after all, even though Rabbi Yehuda ber Shimon said, I don't know who taught our Mishnah, because it seems to be inconsistent, nevertheless, we found a reason that the Mishnah is not inconsistent, after all, and therefore, as usual, the halacha is like the Sam Mishnah, not like Rabbi Yehuda ber Shimon, and as we said the other day, not like Rabbi Chaya ben Akasha. So now we're going to talk about the basic rules of how Nachla works. So this first Mishnah and the Sugya on it, we were talking more about the theoretical aspects, how we know what are the Limudim from the various Pesukim to learn the various details of it. Now we're going to get down to brass tacks. What is the actual order? When somebody dies, who gets their Nachla? The Rambam summarizes it basically like this in Pirush HaMishnah. He said you have three basic rules that our Mishnah is going to be using. Number one is the first one to inherit from somebody is going to be his children, his son if he has, his daughter otherwise. Number two, the heirs of any person who's the next in line to inherit, if that person is dead, those heirs stand in his place. So for example, let's say a person had a son, Reuven, let's say, and Yaakov has a son, Reuven, and when Yaakov dies, Reuven is already dead. Then we use the concept of mishmush, and we say that it goes through Reuven to his own children. So again, if Reuven has sons, he has four sons in the Torah, Chanoch, Palu, Chetzron, and Kami, then they would inherit. If he has no sons, then his daughters. No sons, then you'll go to his, then you'll go to his grandson. No sons, no daughters. No, if his sons aren't alive, then you'll go to his grandson. Or his granddaughters. You'll keep on going down. You'll go down as far down as you can in his son's line.
If he has sons,
then you go for then his sons inherit.
No.
If none of his sons, if he had sons, but they're all dead, but they have living children, then it goes to those children.
Before the daughter.
That's what the Gemara is going to talk about. The Gemara about the argument they had looking on that. So let's put it in terms of names that we have in the Torah. If you have, for example, So Levi has a son, has three sons, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, and he has a daughter, Yecheved. Kohath has Amram, Yitzhar, Chezron, and Uziel. So what would happen is now like this, if Levi dies, then his heirs are Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. No sons, if he never had any sons in the first place, then instead it would go to Yecheved. His daughter. If Gershon, Kohath, and Merari are all dead by now, but Kohath's children, or let's say one of them is dead, let's say Kohath is dead and Gershon and Merari are still alive, but Kohath has his sons, Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, and Uziel, they will get the property that should have gone to Kohath out of Levi's property. So in other words, they'll get one-third of his property, the one-third that, well, two-thirds, actually, two, a half technically, because Kohath is a Bechor, but okay, let's not deal with that complication. So they would get the portion that was supposed to go to Kohath.
The grandchildren,
Amram, Yitzhar, etc.
Right.
And yeah, not first, but together with their uncle, together with Gershon and Merari, because Gershon and Merari are his sons, and these are the children of Kohath, and so forth. You keep on going down like that.
So they would divide the grandchildren with the uncles.
Yeah.
At the same time,
right. So rule number one is that the children come first. Rule number two is that any person who would have been in line to inherit, you go as far down as necessary in his line.
And that's always before the daughters?
Yes, and that's rule number three is boys always, in the same generation, yeah. Boys always come before girls. Across different generations, then no. But within the same generation, where they're on an equal level to inherit, the boys come ahead of the girls.
Didn't we use the word karov? And if you go down,
that's why we said that you start with children, and then you go to the father, and then you go to uncles, and so forth. That we learned that from the word karov, yeah, because we said a child is the closest relative of all. Because if a child or a descendant exists, then no yibum is necessary.
So
a father is the next closest. Yeah.
And also should still come before the grandchildren.
But that's what we're going to see in the Gemara. That's not like that, because the children, because the grandchildren are coming mikoyach. Their father, their parent, who was a son.
Children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and so forth, before the daughters. The daughters never get anything?
No, it means, again, if he never had any sons,
right.
Or if he had sons and they died childless. Look at Fluffpot, for example. He didn't have any sons,
right.
So his daughters inherited.
Right.
Let's say Fluffpot had had a son, and that son had died childless. Same thing. Let's say he had had a son, and that son had a son, and then all of them are dead. Same thing. Only if there's nothing left from male from the line of his father, only then does it go to the female. Okay.
No,
Malchus also his father's son.
Only male.
Yeah. Okay. Seder Nachlos Kachu, the Mishnah says. There's a Seder of The Seder of inheritance is as follows. The pasuk starts off, Ishki Yomotu Bein Ein. We were over there before, but then it was blowing on him and he was uncomfortable. So, yeah. I know. Maybe tomorrow we'll arrange the table differently. We'll see. Yeah, whatever. Okay. So, Ishki Yomotu Bein Ein Loi, a person dies and he has no son, V'havartim es nachlot to the bitter. The pasuk says, and he passed over his nachlot to his daughter. Meaning as follows, Ben Kodim Labat. So rule number three of the three rules that we were saying is that a son comes ahead of a daughter. And rule number two is kol yotze yirecha shal ben kodmim labat. All of the descendants of the son come ahead of the daughter. So again, even if you have the son himself is dead, but he has, let's say, a great-great-great-grandson, so this is like four or five generations removed from Yaakov, nevertheless, he will inherit ahead of his great-great-great-aunt who is the direct daughter of Yaakov. Next, a daughter comes ahead of the brothers. This is rule number one, that a person's children come ahead of anybody else. So the daughter comes ahead of the brothers, and actually she comes ahead of the father, too. So the mission is not mentioning that detail, but we talked about it the other day. And all the descendants of the daughter come ahead of the brothers. Again, if there were no sons, but there was a daughter, and again, she left a daughter or a son or a grandson or a great-grandchild or whatever, those come ahead of their great-great-great-uncles, the brothers of the Nifter. Achen kodmin l'acheyav, the brothers next come ahead of the uncles. So in other words, when Yaakov dies, his first heirs are his children, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, etc. If he has no children at all, then the next one we said was, well, the next one should be his father, Yitzchak, if he's still alive. If Yitzchak is dead, then instead it goes to Esav. If Esav is dead and Esav has no other heirs, then it goes back one generation and goes to Avraham, and from there and from him to Yishmael.
Repeat that again.
So, okay, actually, I think I went back one generation too far. The brothers come ahead of the uncle. So, again, if Yaakov dies and he has no children, then the Nachla will go to Esav. Yeah, no, I had it right. The Nachla will go to Esav. If Esav also has no heirs, then it'll go back one further generation. It'll go to Yaakov's father's brother, namely Yishmael. And we'll start going down the tree over there and see if Yishmael has any living descendants and go from there. And again, all the descendants of the brothers come ahead of the uncles. Again, in this scenario, if Esav has any living descendants, they come ahead of Yishmael. Now, the general rule is, anybody who is ahead in the list of Nachla, anybody who's ahead in the line, then their descendants come ahead. That's where we said, for example, a son comes ahead of a daughter, and therefore the son's descendants come ahead of the daughter. And a father comes ahead of all of his own descendants. Meaning, again, the scenario over here, if Yaakov died childless, then his actual first heir wouldn't be his brother Esav, but rather his father Yitzchak. If Yitzchak's not alive anymore, then it goes to Esav. We talked the other day about the discussion among Rishonim and Achronim, when a brother inherits, is it a direct inheritance or is it through Mishmush through the father? Okay, we said there's two possibilities. We said that the one possibility is it's direct, the other possibility is it goes by way of Mishmush. And we talked about a couple of nachminas of it, one of them being if the father owed money, one of them being if the father signed away his rights to this nachla, etc. Okay. You go as high as necessary. That's nachla mashmeshes for halakha. Oh, so okay, same idea. In other words, Abraham comes ahead of Yishmael because it'll go to Abraham, but if Abraham is dead, the next one after Yaakov would be Yitzchak. The next one after Yaakov, and if not Yitzchak, then Esav. If not Esav, then Avraham. If not Avraham, then Yishmael. Because Yitzchak, Yerecha, which are Yaakov and Esav, come ahead of his own father, Avraham.
Yerecha means
all the descendants of Yitzchak, yeah.
The Av goes before and then stops.
Well, that's what we said. We said in the first sugya of the parak, we said that when we discussed where we know that an Av inherits at all, since Paul's going to spell it out, we said he goes ahead of his other sons, the uncles, or aunts for that matter. Yeah.
He goes ahead, but once it goes back to the father, the uncles go before the grandfather.
Yeah. So again, in other words, when Yaakov dies, again, right, so when Yaakov dies, it should go to his children. No children, then it goes to, then it goes back up to Yitzchak. Yitzchak's dead, so therefore it goes to Esav.
Right, right.
And again, if Esav has any other descendants, any living descendants, it goes to them. Nothing from Esav, then we go back up. Well, Yitzchak already is dead. So now we go back yet another generation to Avraham. Avraham himself being dead, we see, okay, what about Yishmael? Does Yishmael have any living descendants?
Yeah. All that is before the altar.
No. We said the son and the daughter. The son and all of his descendants, then the daughter and all of her descendants, then the father, and then the brothers, and then any of their descendants.
Yeah, right.
Then the grandfather, then the great uncles and any of their descendants, etc. We keep on recursively going up the tree like that. But we start by going downward and see if there's any descendants first. When the Pasuk says Bain, when the Pasuk says that a person dies and doesn't have a son, Ainliel of Bain, based on that, if you only have the word Bain in the Pasuk, you would only know if he has literally a son alive. So Yaakov dies, does he have Reuven, Shimon, Levi, etc. alive? Ben Habain, a Bas Habain, Ben Bas Haben Minayin. How do we know if all he has left is a son of a son? So Hanoich from Reuven, for example, or daughter of a son, like Serach from Asher, or the son of a daughter of a son. Figure out a scenario for yourself, whatever.
The son of a daughter of a son.
By the way, the Rashbam points out the same thing would also be true, the daughter of a daughter of a son. The reason we're not mentioning it, the Rashbam says, it's a matter of linguistics. It's a little harder to say Bas Bas Haben. It's a little easier to say Ben Bas Haben. But the same din would apply to either one. Minayin, so how do we know the same din applies? So in other words, again, Yaakov, the only survivor of Yaakov's family at this point, let's say, for example, is Miriam, three or four generations further. How do we know that she goes ahead of Yaakov's brother Esav, for example? Talmud Lomar, therefore, the Pasuk says, Ein Loi, meaning Ayin Olav. Therefore, the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says, Vein Ein Loi, and we darshan the word Ein to mean Ayin. Check up on him. Check if there's anything in that line of descent from the son. How exactly do we learn that? So Rashbam explains, based on other Gemaras, that the Pasuk could have written Ein without the Yud. Instead, it wrote it with the Yud, which allows us to read it as if it said Ayin, because sometimes we find Aleph and Ayin can be interchanged for purposes of Drash. Yeah, so we interpret it as check. There's a couple of other explanations among Rishonim, how exactly we learn it. One of them is that we can understand Ein as if it said Ayin with an Aleph, meaning there isn't anything. So only if there isn't anything from the son, only then does the daughter Yashin, but otherwise, yeah. Okay, Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here anyway, why we need this limud anyway. Don't we usually say B'nei Bonim, Areim Tabonim? Tosfos goes in all the ins and outs of it and says, for one thing, that primarily only applies when the Pasuk uses the word Zera. Here it doesn't say Zera, it says Bain. So therefore, not necessarily would you know that it meant descendants unless you had the word Amos. Similarly, Bas, when the Pasuk says that if he doesn't have a son, you give it to the daughter. Again, Amiel Bas, you would only know from that it means his actual daughter, Dina, for example. Bas Habas, or Ben Habas, or Bas Ben Habas Minayin. How do we know the same thing would apply if all there's left is a daughter of the daughter, or a son of the daughter, or a daughter of the son of the daughter, Minayin? How do we know the same thing, that they would Yarshan ahead of anybody from the Messi's brothers, from his family? Talmud Lomar, Ein Loi, Ayin Olav, the same thing. The Pasuk says, being Ein Loi Bas. Again, by using the word Ein Loi, we can Yarshan that it means Ayin Olav, check into it, see whether there are any descendants from that daughter. This concept, it's a derusha, like all derushas. I mean, the ultimate thing of it, yeah, I mean, that's how Moshe Rabbeinu told it to the people. But the technical definition of a halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai is something where there's no remez for it in the Pasuk. So this isn't a halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai just because of that. But nevertheless, that is the known din. That is the universally accepted din. Although, as we'll see, the Sukkim disagreed with it. But as far as Teresh Bapeh is concerned, it was universally agreed. Okay, Dad. So how does this work? Which means the Rashbam explains the point of the question is, the same way as we're saying Ayin Olav going downward from sons and daughters, presumably we have to say Ayin Olav going upward, that if he has no children, no descendants, then you have to go upward. So okay, so how does this work? Some of the other Rishonim explain the question a little differently. since the Pasuk also says Ein Loi in the case of brothers and in the case of uncles, Vim Ein Loi Achim, Vim Ein Achim Ba'aviv, so each time we can darshan, we have to darshan the same way. It means Ein Loi. So what would it mean? Nachlam Mashmeshes V'Hilachas Ad Ruvin. It means that we would do mishmush, we would keep on going and searching in each node of the tree until if necessary, we reach back to Ruvin. In other words, so you have, let's say, for example, the Rashbam works out an example for us. The Pasuk tells us Reuben had four sons, Chanoch, Palu, Chetzron, and Tami. Then it tells us Palu had a son, Eliav, and Eliav had three sons, Nemuel, and Dothan, and Aviram. So let's work it out. Suppose Nemuel dies. Let's start with then, for example, so suppose Nemuel's son dies. So the first thing to do would be to look and see if the son of Nemuel has any children. No children, then it goes back to Nemuel himself. Nemuel himself has passed away. Therefore, Nemuel's other children, if Nemuel has any other children, they'll yarshin him. Because again, mishmush, we go up to Nemuel from his son, and then we go downward to see if Nemuel had any other children.
The brothers
of the mess. No brothers, then we go back one generation. We go back to Nemuel's father, who was Eliab. And since Eliab is dead, we go to his other children, Dothan and Aviram, and see if Dothan is still alive or if he has any living descendants. And if not, then is Aviram alive and does he have any living descendants? If not, so there's nothing left of the family of Eliab. We go back yet another generation to Palu, see if Palu had any other children. If yes, then we'll go to them or their descendants, or the case may be. Nothing, then we go back to Reuben. So we go all the way back to Reuben, and we see, fine, so there's nothing left from the family of Palu. So fine, we look at the other families. Is there anybody from Chanos' family? Is there anybody from Chetzron's family, from Kaimon's family? And we start going down the tree in the same way with them. So are any of them alive? No. Are any of their sons alive? No. Are any of their daughters alive? No. Any of their sons' sons, etc.? We keep on recursively going through the tree like that. So the bottom line is there's always going to be a Yodish as long as the guy is not a Gid. So the question is, why are we using the expression that the Nachla goes all the way back to Reuben if necessary? And obviously we don't need specifically Reuben. I mean, by the same logic, if the guy's from Shevet Shimon, it means we go all the way back to Shimon. We're mentioning Reuben only because he happens to be the first Shevet. But why don't we just say more straightforwardly, it goes back to Yaakov. Amar Abaya, Gmiri Dele Kola Shivta. Abaya says the reason is because we have the Kabbalah, hello? We have the Kabbalah that no Shevet will ever go extinct. Meaning, therefore, if you have a person from Shevet Reuben dies, no matter what, there is always going to be another heir descended from Reuben in the male line, who therefore belongs to Shevet Reuben, who will be able to yarshin it. It might be his great-great-great-great-great-grandfather's son's daughter or whatever. So it might be the Mets's, you know, 15th cousin or something, but nevertheless it'll still exist. There will be somebody from the Shevet.
So today we're saying then by that premise that the Shevet still exists.
Yeah, every one of the Shvatim still exists. Yeah, we've talked about that many times. Yeah.
No, we said that
we said that all of them are gonna return lots of love.
In ourselves.
Yeah.
But we didn't say that Shvatim still exist separately.
Not separately. We may not know who's from Reuben and who's from Shimon and so forth, but we do know that there are people around from all 12 Shvatim.
We know there are people
from all 12 Shvatim. Yeah. Well, that's what we mean.
They don't exist separately.
We don't know which one is which. Fine. But nevertheless, they exist.
Separately? So,
no. Somebody in the world, there's some Yid in the world who descends from Shevet Reuben. There's some Yid in the world who descends from Shevet Shimon, etc. Do we know who they are?
No.
What do you mean only?
Only
what do you mean only? A person belongs to only one Shevet. His father's 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 father, etc. However many generations we need to go back was Reuben. His father's father's father, etc. is Shimon. And so forth. There's always one, at least one member of each Shevet alive. Therefore, if a person from Shevet Reuben dies, there's always going to be somebody. You don't have to go all the way back to Yaakov. All you have to do is go back to Reuben, if necessary, in order to find an heir for him. Now, how do we talk and know that no Shevet goes extinct? The Rashbam brings a pasuk that says, the famous pasuk, "Ki ani avai eloi shaniti, I, Hashem, have never changed. Ba'atim b'nei Yisrael, na'atim b'nei Yaakov lechalisim, and you, b'nei Yaakov, you children of Yaakov, have never gone extinct." So b'nei Yaakov means literally the Shvatim. So therefore, no Shevet has gone extinct. There's an interesting thing. One of the Rishonim, Rabbi Shmuel ben Chachma, one of the Rishonim who lived in Egypt, mentions another thing about it. He says, we know there's an association between the 12 Shvatim and the 12 Mazalos. And just like the 12 Mazalites have to exist forever, the world needs them. So also, the world needs the 12 Shvatim. Rabbi Shmuel ben Chachma, his name is. He was a Rishon, yeah. Okay. So that's the bottom line. There's always going to be some other heir from the same shape.
Mashiach is going to tell us
which. Mashiach will tell us who's who, yeah. Okay. Amar Kola Oimer Tirash Basim Bachabe. Now let's consider, again, going back to the scenario in our mission. So let's say, for example, again, you had Yaakov passes away, and you have he leaves behind his son Asher and his daughter Dina. Let's ignore the other Shvatim for now. He leaves behind his son Asher and his daughter Dina. Asher previously passed away, and Asher has a daughter Serach. So now you have that you're going to have the potential heirs of Yaakov are Dina, his daughter, and Serach, his granddaughter. Which one comes first? Our Mishnah told us the descendants of the son come first. Therefore, Serach is going to get the whole Nachla, and Dina will not, because we consider Serach to be in the place of her father. So, Kol Ha'omer Tirash Basin Basabain, anybody who says not like that, anybody who says that a daughter should inherit equally with a son's daughter, meaning again that Dina and Serach should be equal heirs, Afilu Nasi should be Israel. Even if the person who says this is a Nasi among the Jewish people, and therefore you would think what he says goes, you must know what he's talking about. Nevertheless, Ein Shemin Lo, we still do not listen to him, She'en and Elamite Tzedukin, because this is just the way the Tzedukin did it. Now, the Rashbam explains, the point is like this. Even, let's say, so the Nasi at one point wants to gather together the Sanhedrin and actually pass in the din like that. He wants to use, let's say, the Kavach Chomer that we're going to say is doing that the Tzedukin used. Nevertheless, we don't accept what he's saying, because that would be following the Tzedukim, and it would make people think that we're going to listen to the Tzedukim or something, which we don't want to do. Then the Rashbam brings another explanation. We're not necessarily talking about paskinning a halacha. We're talking about, let's say, we talked before, and we're going to talk later on in the parak, about you could have, according to Rabbi Yochanan and Bereka, a person could have, let's say, five sons, and he decides, b'shas misa, he decides, I want only one of them to yarshin. Rabbi Yochanan and Bereka says he's able to do that. So, according to that, what we'd be saying over here is, let's say that he were to say he has a daughter, he has a son's daughter, he has Dina and he has Serach. He wants to say that Serach should, he wants to say that Dina should inherit together with Serach, or ahead of her. We would still say, Ein Shemim Lo, because it would be like the Tzedukim. Okay, the Rashbam says, I don't accept that explanation, because the fact of the matter is, never mind my Tzedukim. The fact is, the Torah says that in that scenario, only Serach stands to inherit, not Dina. So that even Rabbi Yechon Mabroka only says his din when you have both people, let's say all the five children, all the five sons, any one of them could have yarshin him. Rabbi Yechon Mabroka is not saying that, for example, if you have five sons, that you can say, I don't want any of them to yarshin me, I want my brother to yarshin me. That doesn't work. Yeah. So the Rashbam says that can't be what the Gemara means to me. Tosfos brings a third explanation that it means. Let's say we're not talking about the Nasi sitting down and paskining the din together with the Sanhedrin on the basis of Kavachoyim or whatever. We're talking about they want to make a takana. They want to make a temporary takana, and we're going to see on Kufta Zayin Amud Aleph. We're going to see soon that in fact there was a time in Jewish history when they had to make such a takana.
Right.
We'll see. Nevertheless, though, we don't accept it because it's nice and looking.
Except when it's temporary.
No. Once the Tzedukim came along, the one that we're going to say later on was before the Tzedukim came along, therefore we weren't worried about it. But now that the Tzedukim exists and they came up with this concept, we're not going to ever allow such a thing to be done even as a temporary measure, because we don't want to make it look like we're following them. What did the Tzedukim do? The Tanya, we learn in the Braisa, that above Esther B'Tavis, Havna L'Dinana. On the 24th of Tavis, we returned to our din, meaning we returned to paskening the halacha the proper way. Our Gemara, by the way, says the 24th of Tavis. Megillas Tainis, which is where it's quoting it from, actually says the 24th of Av. There's a bit of discussion among the Achronim, what is the correct year over here. It's interesting. There seems to have been a Sicha where the Rebbe once talked about it in the early years, but the actual printed text of the Sicha just says there's an Arichos about it, but he doesn't go into the details. And then in a letter written around that time, somebody commented on it, and the Rebbe said, yeah, I'll send you a copy of the Sicha, and you can see for yourself, but between the letter and the Sicha, we don't have the explanation. because the letter refers to the sicha, and the sicha refers, and the sicha just says there's an arichus, but doesn't go into it. So I don't know if the manichim at that time forgot it or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. Okay. What happened? Show you dukin oimim tura shabbat in bat haben. Dukim argued exactly that in a scenario like this, Dina and Sarah should be equal co-heirs. Dina being the daughter, Sarah being the daughter of the son, they should both yarshin equally. Interesting explanation I saw from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, why Taka, what was their big thing about this, and why we're making a yumtiv over the fact that we defeated them. Because we know one of the famous things is that Tzedukim didn't believe in Tereshav Sab in general, in Tereshav Al Peh in general, but specifically, therefore, one of the things they didn't believe in is the whole concept of Gan Eden, Kesa Mesim, and all, because those are all things that are primarily discussed in Tereshav Al Peh. So they held, in other words, once a person's dead, that's it, they're gone. No reason to consider them anymore. Therefore, you don't have a son over here. All you have is a daughter, and a daughter of a son. Therefore, they should be equal. Whereas the Chachamim had we're saying that no, the son is taka dead, but he still has a neshama that's alive in Gan Eden, and therefore he can pass it down. Even though he's already dead, he can pass it down to his daughter, and therefore she yarshin mekayachim. So the big thing. Anyway, so Tavna Lidana, we went back to our proper din, to our proper way of paskening the din. So Tzedukim argued Tzir Shabbat in Bas Aben. So Tzedukim argued that a daughter and a granddaughter should yarshin together equally. How did they disprove them? Nitpa lahen Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai joined up with them. Meaning, like, it's sometime in the time of the Second Mishnah Mikdash. Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. So we're talking towards the end of the Second Mishnah Mikdash. Nitpa lahen Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai joined them. In other words, he went to where they were or whatever to go argue with them. Yeah, Amalahem, and he says to them, Shoytim, Minayin Zalachem. Where are you getting this idea from? V'loihoy Adam Sheikh Zidu Dabra, and none of them had anything to say. Chut Mizok and Echad Shoyim Apatik Kinegde, except for one old guy, one old Stuki, who was chattering or prattling or whatever and talking up against him. He said, I have a raya for what we're saying. V'oimer, he argues like this, Kavachoymer. Madoch, a daughter of a son, where she only is in position to yarshin because her father was the son of the mess, and therefore you're saying she yarshins him. How much more so a daughter who comes directly from his koyach? This is directly his daughter. How much more so that the daughter directly, Dina, should be yarshining him, not only sex? Yeah, like Oshkin. Incidentally, by the way, you know, I mean, on the face of it, it is a valid kavachomer. We're going to see Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai shlugged it up. But this is not the only place we know. There's another place in the Gemara. It's also from the Gilas Tainis that mentions a similar kind of argument that went on Dukim. Very much negated to this time of year. The question, when do you bring the korban ha'omer and when it's Shavuot? Does mimachar as a Shabbos mean the day after Shabbos, like the Tzedukim argued, or does it mean the day after Pesach? Like we know. We didn't, but the Gemara talks about it in Menachos, but it's a famous thing. There you have a similar kind of argument where one Zokin comes up with an argument where Rabbi Yechonen tells them, Shoytim minayin zelachem, and one Zokin comes up with an argument and they go back and forth on it. But I don't know if it's the same guy, but anyway. The point is, the Rebbe says an interesting thing over there, that actually, again, the svara that this Duki is mentioning over there in connection with Mimachar HaShabbos, there is room for it al pitara. It's not completely out of left field. It's not some shtus, because if it was some shtus, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai is not going to get involved with it. It has a certain validity, except that the Torah comes and overrides it and tells us not so on the basis of something else. But as there's a whole explanation in a sicha from Nunala, Duki argues over there that it's a matter of Abba Tisrael to make it that this way we have 2 days of Yom Tov, one after the other, Shabbos and Shavuot, one after the other. And Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai points out that if you want to argue Abba Tisrael, I have a different argument. And the Rebbe explains over there in the sicha that the idea is Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai tells him, very nice, Abba Tisrael is an important thing, but there's a higher level in Abba Tisrael, which you're not looking at. So the Rebbe doesn't discuss this Gemara over here, but it's a similar kind of thing, evidently, that the Zuki's argument has a certain, there is room for it, Abba Torah, but it's overridden by something higher. That's ultimately Torah, Kachmasa, Ritzon, Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore that's what overrides it. Okay. So, Kara all of us on Mikra Azeh.
And what's overriding it?
That's what we're going to see. That's what we're going to discuss. Kara all of us on Mikra Azeh. So Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai said, let me quote you the following passage. The Pasuk says, and it knew the end of Parshas Vayishlach, it describes the descendants of Esav, the descendants of Seir. It says like this, Ela b'nei Seir ha'chori yoshvei ha'aretz. The following are the sons of Seir, the chori, that was the name of the nation he came from, the people who lived in the land, and it starts listing, Loitan, v'shoivah, v'tzivah, and v'ab. And then it lists three more. Uchtiv, then a few psukim later, it says, Ela b'nei Tziva and Va'aya v'ana. Then it says a few psukim later, these are the sons of Tziva, Aya and Ana. So what is it? Is Ana a son of Seir, and therefore brother of Tziva, or is he a son of Tziva? It means that Tzivan was Nizana with his mother, the wife of Seir, and Anna was born. So therefore, the pasuk lists him among the children of Seir because he was the son of Seir's wife, because some of the Rishonim say because he was raised, they assumed that he was Seir's son, and therefore they raised him as such. But really, he was actually Tzivan's son. And the point is, the pasuk is listing him, when the pasuk lists him among the children of Seir, the implication is the pasuk is listing the people who inherited from Seir. It's saying that when Seir died, who are the Yoshvei Haaretz, who are the people who now live in the land, who inherited from him, Lotan and Shovel and Tzivan and Ana. So we see that even though Ana is a grandson of Seir, because he's a son of Tzivan by Znus, and Tzivan is a son of, and then Tzivan is a son of Seir. Nevertheless, Anna is listed equally together with the children of Seir. So you see that grandchildren are just like children. Now the question is, if Anna is a boy, I mean the Tzadokim agree that if Asher left a son, then that son goes ahead of Dinah. So that's according to the Rashbam, that the Tzadoki himself is going to point that out. Tosfos has a different explanation. Tosfos says that actually Anna over here may have been a woman. The pasuk later on mentions one of Esav's wives is Ahaliva Bas Anna Bas Tzivain. Why is she described as the daughter of Anna, the daughter of Tzivain? So the Medrash says, again, it's similar, that there was another thing of Znus over there, that Tzivain also was Mizana with his daughter-in-law, with Anna's wife, and they had a daughter, Ahalivama, and therefore she is in reality Bas Tzivain, but on the face of it, the daughter of Anna. So therefore it means Anna was a boy. But Tosfos says that no, what it means is Anna was a girl, she was a woman, so therefore Ahalivama is the daughter of Anna, who is the daughter of Tzivan. So therefore, in that case, it works out very nicely. You see that a granddaughter, Anna, is listed among the children, Loitan and Shovel, together with her uncles. No, but the dinim of Yerusha, that a son yarshins from his father, applies to Goyim as well. The Rambam actually writes that din is part of the Shevet Mitzvah Nenayach. The rest of inheritance, the Goyim can do whatever they feel like. But at least the concept that a father bequeaths to his son, that applies to Goyim Midaraita.
The way to fight the Goyim is not the way to fight the Hashem.
No, so according to the Rambam, the only detail that applies as part of Shevet Mitzvah Nenayach is that a son must inherit from his father. Everything else, however they want to set it up, however American law or whatever wants to set it up, isn't to hate. They can set it up. But yeah. So the question is, Viduma Tre Anna Hahu, who says it's the same Anna? Maybe the Anna who's listed among Seir's sons is not the same one who's listed among Tzivan's sons. Omar Rabba, so Rabba says, Amina Milta Dele Omar Shabur Malka. I'm going to say a vote on this, I'm going to say an answer on this, that even Shabur Malka never said. Umanu, and who is Shabur Malka? Shmuel. Shmuel is called Shabur Malka because just like the king's word is law in the country, Shmuel's word is law when it comes to halacha. The halacha is always like Shmuel in Dini Mominus. Some of the Mephoshim also say because Shmuel was friendly with Shavur. Anyway, or Ikadamri, we have another version, Amar Papa, that is in a later generation, or Papa says, Amina Milta Dele Amar Shavur Malka. I will say an explanation that Shavur Malka never said, Umanu, and who is Shavur Malka, and this, if your Papa is saying it, is Rabba, because again, the halacha is usually like Rabba and Dini Mominus, like we learned yesterday. Anyway, the answer is, Amar Krof, who am not. The Pasuk says, after it lists that Tzivan's children are Aya and Anna, it says, this is Anna, Ashamata Sayyema Meminba, who found mules, who crossbred mules over there. The who means who Anna de Meifra, means to tell us this is the same Anna that was mentioned earlier in the Psukim. So therefore it is the same one. New, so you see that a grandson is together with the son, so, or granddaughter, according to Tosfos. Amalei, so the Psukim tells him, Rebbe, Pekahata Pachereni. So the Psukim says to him, and that's all, you're going to dismiss me with that. Meaning the Rashbam says, the point of the Tzadoki is saying, you're talking about a grandson. I'm talking about a granddaughter. You still don't have any raya from that pasuk. According to Tosfos, the way that the Bach understands it, the Tzadoki misunderstood. Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai is mentioning Anna because he knew that Anna was a woman, like we just said, Tosfos holds. The Tzadoki misunderstood, thought that Anna was a man, and after all, the pasuk does say on him, ooh, Anna, implying that he's a man, and therefore he asks that this, so what kind of an answer is that? Amaloi, so Rabbi Yechon, if Anna is a boy, then of course he yarshins from his grandfather ahead of his aunt. We do him agree with that also, yeah. Amaloi, so Rabbi Yechon, and Zakkai tells him, Shoyte, the loy to hey, Torah Shlema Shalonu Kisicha B'Kela Shalachem. It's not a question, sorry. V'loy tehei Torah shlema shalonu kisicha b'teila shalachem. Our complete Torah should not be like your silly talk. Meaning, the Rashbam says, I haven't really given you the real answer until now because you're a tzaduki and I don't want to teach you the real secrets of the Torah. But since you called me on it, then fine, I'll give you the real answer. I'll shlog up your kavachayim. According to Tosfos, according to the Bach's understanding of Tosfos, rather he's saying, you're misunderstanding. You thought that you misunderstood my answer. You thought Anna is a boy and therefore it's no daya. I'm telling you that Anna is a girl. And therefore it is a perfect, and therefore it is a perfect daya. As far as your kavachayim, well, I'll shlog it up. Marsha says another vote on it also. The tzaduki is arguing like this. Okay, so the Torah tells us about Sayer's family. So what? The Torah is telling us a story. Not meant that we're supposed to learn any dinim from it. Just like when we tell stories. But Yechon Ben Zakkai tells him, no, our Torah Shlema, our Torah, which everything of it is true and complete, it doesn't sound tell stories. Not like your Sichem Pele. Yeah, it's not like your Sichem Pele. Exactly. So what about your Kavah Chomer? I'll answer you. After all, consider that a granddaughter goes ahead when it comes to the brothers. Namely, when it comes to Benoit Tzlochot, for example, we're going to learn in the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it, that Benoit Tzlochot inherited not only his own property, but also the property that he inherited from his father, Hefer, the portion of Eretz Yisrael that should have gone to Hefer, because Hefer is one of the people who went out of Mitzrayim. So we see that they went ahead, even of their uncles, the other children of Hefer, because Tzlochot is one son of Hefer. He had other sons as well, the Pashtun. And we see that the daughters still went ahead of their uncles.
Which portion of Eretz?
A portion of Eretz Yisrael, whatever, someplace in the portion of Manasseh. How can you compare it to a daughter who has less of a status when it comes to the brothers? Namely, again, if Tzlochot had sisters, then those sisters wouldn't inherit because their brothers, Tzlochot's other brothers, would be the ones to inherit Hefer's property. Yet we see that Tzlochot's daughters inherit in his place and inherit from Hefer's property. So therefore, that slogs up your Kavah Chomer and shows that, no, you can't say that a daughter who comes from his koyach is stronger than a granddaughter who comes from his son's koyach. You see, on the basis of that, that's not like that. V'nitzchum, so they beat them. They disproved what the Tzlochot was saying. V'oysayim after Ur Yom Tov, and that day became one of the Yom Tov and Megillah Tanya. So that's Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai started by proving it from the case of Anna, but the Tzaduki didn't accept that proof, so Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai brought him a different proof. According to the Rashbam, he didn't want to bring the proof first because he didn't want to teach Taimei Torah to a Tzaduki. But then when he had no choice, then he had to. According to Tosfos, it's not Lachchila. He says, you misunderstood my explanation from Anna. Because in fact, Anna was a woman, and therefore it is perfectly valid. What about your Kavah Chomer? I'll show you how I slog up your Kavah Chomer. And he slogged it up based on the thing from Tzlochot.